Well, Alex, welcome once again to our little podcast. I was sorry to hear this will be your last show, as you need time to focus on other projects and things like that. It's just been a lot of fun working together.
Thanks, Kurt. This has been fun. I wish you all the best luck on your new episodes. Definitely invite me back as a guest sometime.
Well, you know, I'd love to do that. And seeing as we only sit a few chairs apart, I could sometimes hear interesting cases you get that our listeners might be interested in.
That'd be great.
Actually, you know, as a last-minute surprise, I arranged for one of our longtime listeners to call in and ask you a question live, if you're up for it.
Really?
Hey, Alex, this is Chad calling from Detroit Lakes. I had a case several years ago, and you never got back to me. What gives? That IFS file transfer is still hung up.
I do not remember that at all.
Well, anyway, here's my question. So I'm running an office fantasy league on the I, and I'm wondering if there's a good way to use RPG to build a player ranking system based on historical performance and injury data. I want to draft a Viking. Can you help me make a smart pick here?
Sorry, I'm a Packers fan.
Welcome to You, Me, and IBMI.
So Alex, today on the podcast, we have Scott Forsty. Do you know who Scott is?
I do, yes. He is the main SQL guy.
Okay, so hold on. I'm just going to get up here and let him in. You can come in now, Scott.
Hey, well, guys.
Hey, welcome. Because neither Alex and I are SQL experts, we went to some of the database people and said, hey, what are some good questions ask you? Holly Rademacher.
This is going to be good.
It's great.
I mean, I think she's pitching you some softballs here. You know, it's nothing too technical because it wouldn't make sense to most of our listeners anyway.
I'll take a curveball.
It wouldn't make sense to me.
Whatever ball.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Well, hey. I that's really clever that you did that.
Well, what did I say? If you don't know your meat, know your butcher. You know? What else they say? Oh, we've also said before that we the cobbler's kids have the worst shoes. So, like, my printer at home is a disaster.
Grandparents had a bakery in Two Harbors, Minnesota, and my mother said they always had the leftover bread.
Oh, nice.
They never got to bring home the real nice one.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Because they would sell it. Right,
right.
So, kind of like on the same thing with the cobblers.
Yeah. We have one of those stores in Green Bay that had like the Hostess cakes and bread and stuff. And anyway, it was nice. It was all new stuff. But my mom, we would shop there all the time. My mom always called it the used bread store.
Oh, yeah.
So it was just this weird place that was open once.
We had one of those for a while in Rochester.
Yeah.
I never went in it.
Gingerbread house. Well, no, that's not that one too.
That was legit bakery.
Yeah.
Really, really good stuff and good people there. But I never went into Hostess. Yeah, it was over by what used to be Jiffy Lube on 37.
Sure. Well, and that brings up an interesting point that you are, unlike Alex and I, who are from Wisconsin, you are from Rochester.
I am. I went to Rochester John Marshall High School, John Adams, Lincoln Choice School.
Yep.
I understand you have some antecedents that were involved, that worked here at IBM.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
I'm second gen.
That is wild. Yeah.
My dad was an electrical engineer on the AS400, and then his career path changed, and he was a development manager for a period of time. He did parts procurement, variety of other things, and I had no goal to be like my dad, you know, do what my dad did, but I really loved math, and I went to the University of Minnesota, and I had to choose between math and computer science, and I chose computer science because I didn't know what it was.
Sure.
It's a good reason to choose something.
Yeah,
and I just loved it.
Huh.
And my father-in-law was on the software side of the house. He was a software development manager for many years, so I grew up knowing this campus. You know, as a youngster, we got to come in maybe once a year and do punch cards or go to...
Were punch cards?
Yeah.
Oh, you mean like copying punch cards? Like
No.
Little cards.
No, I know what a punch card, but what did you do with it?
We got to sit down in a machine and type out your name. And then the punch card would get produced.
Oh, and you'd just take it home and like a souvenir.
Yeah, it was like a souvenir.
Oh, that's right. Cool.
That was super fun, right? And getting to walk through the plant. The plant seemed enormous because I was a little guy. And here I am.
Yeah, that's right.
Awesome.
So is there going to be a third generation of 4SD IBMers?
That's an excellent question. And all things I can see so far, no. Okay. They all went their own path and seemed very happy with it.
Kids need to go on their own path.
You also
find open roads.
I've got a lawyer and a cook and a teacher in my kids' vocations.
That's awesome.
So they're all doing good work and helping people, and we feel great about that.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's great.
Interesting. Yeah. My son is a little bit interested in engineering. He signed himself up for the Lego robotics after school. So we'll see how that goes. But my daughters, they're really more focused on the humanities.
You know, I taught chess club in my kids' grade school to kind of help out, right?
Yeah.
Thinking, okay, this is going to bring them into the fold, and right? Because if you love chess, maybe you'll love solving other kind of problems.
Sure. Right.
Didn't work.
Yeah.
Didn't work.
Okay.
Maybe it worked in ways you hadn't considered. Maybe it worked to make someone a teacher.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Alex and I were talking about kind of the beginning of the S400 and the IBM i and database specifically. And one of the questions we had was about, actually, before I get to that, I did have, just to verify, because, you know, not all of our questions today, but some of our questions today are going to be about this thing called SQL. I had a question from somebody in the center. Is that is it pronounced SQL Server?
Oh dear. No, I don't have many pet peeves, but that's one of them.
Yeah, right. That's Microsoft's thing.
If people say SQL, that's a product. That's not an industry standard.
I knew that that was not right.
Yeah,
but Lael was like, big "Ask him if it's SQL."
Well, this is Lael. Oh, perfect. Yeah, yeah. Okay, Lael. Well played.
Well played.
Also, just a small little thing. It's data. It's not data.
Okay. Not database.
It's not a database.
Yeah.
It's a database.
Okay, there you go. Well, you would know. If anybody here would know, you would know.
Has SQL always existed on what used to be the AS400?
No, it hasn't. Oh my gosh. We have two flavors of database on DB2 for I. Can you believe it? Every other database just has one. What's R2? Well, SQL, of course, because everyone is looking hard at that based on industry standards. But prior to SQL, there was native database. And the architects of the AS400 had this vision of having DDS-created physical files and logical files. We needed somewhere to put the data. And the constructs underneath the surface are very similar, or in some cases the same. But the user experience is completely different, and it's proprietary technology. It only existed on AS400. So part of my job is to explain this to clients and give them reasons to change, because they have
reasons to change from native database to SQL?
In some cases, yes.
Okay.
My title is business architect, and as a business architect, I have to make some accommodations for the realities of businesses. So I don't just say change everything because you can,
right,
or because it's my preference.
Right.
I give the business rationale and I say, all right, you walk through the door if it makes sense to you, right? It's your business. So part of it is changing the data model from DDS to DDL has benefits. Some of the benefits are immediate, better performance, better protection of validity of data. Wow, that sounds good. Or maybe it's easier for you to find staff to run your business because the next new hire you add to your team knows SQL.
Right.
But they probably don't know DDS.
Right.
Right.
That's a huge thing. You have to have people to staff your business, so you have to be using technologies that
industry
are
standard.
Well known.
Yeah, right. Most people are seeing the benefits of those, but they're trying to navigate to, while they have legacy systems, it doesn't make sense to try to tackle everything, so identify those places where it does make sense and move ahead. Some people call it, this is scary, modernization.
Sure.
But that word is really scary to the decision makers because they think, okay, I'm going to spend a lot of money and take a lot of risk. Where's the upside in this?
Yeah. Right.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Have you ever heard that one?
Oh, yes, all the time.
But yes. The problem is...
commonly from our customers.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, it's not broken, but it's getting more and more difficult each day.
Yeah.
Somebody's maintaining it who had no business in writing it. So yeah. They're going to be probably very careful, you hope.
Right.
because you need it to keep working, but the business change stagnates. And then people get the perception of the platform as being old.
Right.
Because they can't move ahead.
Which is not fair because it's changing and adapting all the time. But I think probably because it's rooted in these core technologies that have been around forever, it's looked at as just being old.
You know what? You need a change agent. That's what I believed for many, many years, that I have to help people find those change agents within their teams.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I try to support those people. I try to teach them things or give them things. Here's free working SQL.
Right.
Right? Or go watch this video blog and you'll know how to do it. Or, go to a conference and whatnot. Because if they can be successful, then the business will benefit and platform loyalty will benefit. Mm-hmm. Everybody wins.
That would be a great transition to some questions that I wanted to ask you. Because one of the ways I think a lot of people know you, I mean, generally, you are well known across the whole IBMI.
Am I really?
I think so.
I think probably.
Okay.
Got some good name recognition.
Okay.
But one of the areas when I first saw you was, because I'm interested in video stuff, I saw that you were doing your IC video blogs through Common. Others are hosted on the Common website. Right?
Exactly.
And you've been doing that for how long?
I'm not sure how long, a couple years plus.
Okay.
I know that we're almost to our century mark for number of episodes.
Oh, that's awesome. Oh, wow.
When we started this, Tim Rowe and I pitched this idea to our lead product manager at the time was Allison Butterell. And we said, "Wait, we're hearing from clients. Everybody's clamoring. You guys don't produce any video education and everybody else does. So we want to try to do it." And Allison was... supportive, but a little skeptical. She says, "You still need to do your normal jobs, you know."
Right.
We said, of course. But yeah, so Common was a natural collaboration and partner on this because their mission is to help people with their careers with our technology.
Okay, sure.
Right? So they host events and they have conferences and other learning resources.
Okay.
So why not put it there? I've had people note that they expect it to be on YouTube or some other venue. But we put it in Common for that reason.
Yeah, we get that question too. And one of the reasons that we're not on YouTube, whereas some IBM videos are, but there are the licensing on that is such that somebody on YouTube could take a video that we made, cut the beginning, cut the end, add their beginning and end,
then
they would just reuse it, and that's like part of the terms of usage. So our stuff is all on Media Center, and plus then it has no ads. And
right.
People can watch it without seeing things that they didn't want to see. And it's also, then some companies and some countries block YouTube. So if you put it on YouTube, a lot of people wouldn't have access to it, even though you think it is widely used.
So. Oh, okay. So since we're both in the same business here, I'll tell you that we have merch.
Do you have merch?
We do not have merch.
Okay.
Although I was thinking.
Note to self.
For Scott, I thought we should maybe make him like a You, Me, and IBMI trucker cap, but I didn't.
Oh.
I got around to sewing this.
That would have been awesome.
Mic filter today, but I did not do a cap.
It's not too late. Wow. So we have stickers. We started with stickers.
Okay.
And we're seeing them show up on some people's laptops and other things.
Oh.
And we have apparel.
Really?
We have our own branded shirts.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And we paid for this ourselves, or I should say Tim paid for it himself.
Yeah. That's what we have to do sometimes.
What comes next? That's what I'm wondering. We'll have to ask Tim. But
Well, Common is going on next week, I think, right?
Yeah. Yeah. In Pittsburgh.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I think Wayne is going to that.
Good.
Maybe like an iPhone case or a phone case where on the back of it,
yes.
It would have like commonly used SQL commands.
Uh-huh. Now we're getting somewhere.
Right.
Yeah. Blue skying.
Yeah. Right.
Along that vein, like let's say there is a new employee and they're tasked with learning SQL so that they can access the relational database. Do you have any recommendations on how they should educate themselves?
Oh, that's a great one. So Common is an easy thing to point out because they have so many excellent speakers who are subject matter experts, extraordinary people, and very generous as well. So if you can go to attend a remote or in-person Common session, you're going to learn a lot. That being said, my success factor has all been hands-on. I learn best by doing.
Yeah,
and so if you carve out regular time for yourself and you have some curiosity, like some aspect rather than the entire thing, just pick something that you want to pursue. Right. I want to learn how to write queries. I want to get some data in a database and do something with it or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, you'll follow your North Star and you'll learn along the way things you didn't expect.
Okay.
So I learn by doing. I like to have desk references because we're all programmers. You should have some help along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So the IBM documentation is pretty good, but that's more reference material, I think. The examples that I publish in ACS are very intentional to try to help people who don't know SQL.
Yeah. I rely on those all the time.
Are
you? I go into Run SQL Scripts and I go to, I don't remember the pulldown, the name of the pulldown, but I go to the examples and I'll type in a search term, right?
Perfect.
So that I can find what I'm looking for, the SQL statement that will help me get the information I'm looking for.
Well, example. So, well, like, what's an example of a search term for
well,
what you're talking about?
Netstat, right? I mean, Netstat is a command that exists on the IBM I that I have executed many, many times over my long career with IBM. And there is an SQL service for Netstat. So what is it called? Netstat Info?
There's four of them.
Oh, there's four of them. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I need to go
that's
back
one of
back
them.
And visit it. Yeah,
no,
yeah.
You're doing great. Because if you tap Netstat, in fact, I do the same thing to find my own SQL because I write all those.
I was going to ask you that. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I put examples in there that I appreciate. Mm-hmm. And one of the things I've tried to do is not just cover different things you can do, but different styles of SQL. So like if somebody hasn't done a join before, type join or a lateral or a with, you know, a common table expression or, you know, so there's intentionally a wide variety and not just select star from.
Yep.
Because everybody knows that one.
Yep.
What they may not know is, oh, okay, how do I transform a column into a different name or combine it with something so that it actually is different than any column?
Sure.
Or how do I get the top 10 list of something? Those are really pretty popular.
Oh, what would be a top 10 list? Like top 10 like frequently pinged IP addresses or something like that?
Oh, you could do that one for sure. You could do a top 10 number of jobs right now that have transferred the most data off my box.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody likes to think about security topics. Or who's consuming the most storage is the one everybody loves. Either from spool data or just from traditional storage device data.
Sure.
Those are trivial if you know where to look. Mm-hmm. And you don't actually have to know anything about SQL to click on something.
And I think that those will be kind of hard to find on the system just by running native system commands, I think.
Wouldn't
that be pretty tricky to find?
They would be tricky to find because you'd have to find it yourself, I think. And if you're going to use SQL and not use ACS, you can do it, but you're going to have to code it up. And if you're going to do it outside of SQL services, good luck.
You spend a lot of time in ACS run SQL scripts.
Right.
Have you played with Visual Studio Code much?
I have. So here's a little behind the scenes stuff. I decided that I wanted to be part of their team.
Oh.
So I just told them, I'm part of your team.
All right. Awesome.
I said, thank you. It's an open source project. What are they going to say? No?
Right.
Everybody's welcome.
Right.
So I invited myself and I said, all right, well, I know a lot of the things about what you can do in the database. So use me as your evaluator or your idea generator. And I'll give back. I'll test whatever new feature you come up with.
Then
you'll know, right, okay, is it ready to go? Or maybe there's some things to look at.
Yeah.
So that's the partnership I established.
Okay.
So, yeah, I'm very much a part of the database extension in VS Code.
Yeah.
And I love it. That thing is moving faster than any other topic.
It's crazy how fast.
You use it?
Oh, yeah. And actually, I got to tell you, I was just browsing around at some of the examples that are in the DB2 for I extension. I'm sorry if I'm getting the name of it wrong, but you know, you've got a nice list of SQL statements there, and one of them was to find the top consumers of storage on a system.
Exactly,
because that's always a problem that we have in the center, right? People are leaving their crap on the systems, taking up all kinds of space
all the time.
But this SQL statement generated a nice, pretty graph. So, so I could take a screenshot of this and send it to the guy that was using up all the space on the system.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Yeah, so those are known as notebooks or
yes,
Jupyter notebooks.
Yes, yes.
Right? So visualization of data. And I put a couple examples in there, and that's one of them. There's another one I'm really proud of that does a security kind of oversight.
Oh, okay.
So different security perspectives. And the intention there was just more or less paint the art of what's possible.
Yeah.
Because what do we all learn as programmers, right? It's better to start with something working.
Yeah.
You know, you can just adjust it as needed rather than, you know, have to build it from scratch.
You mentioned the word security.
Right.
So, and this is a question from Holly. So you can blame her if you don't like the question. But, object level security, that's kind of the bedrock of IBMI security. And SQL uses that, right? When a user tries to run a query against a table, it's going to check to see whether that user has authority to read that table. Mm-hmm. Do you foresee adding any additional security to prevent SQL clients from accessing data they shouldn't be accessing? So for example, not being able to run a update statement.
Absolutely. If you look at the last two operating system releases, the leading enhancements are security enhancements.
Okay.
And they're just everywhere because clients need them. One of the things that we are moving ahead with is more instances of function usage. I would anticipate more function usage to appear so that the users don't need the higher level authority, special authority.
Okay.
So, hey, we're not going to give you all object where you could do anything and wreck everything. Instead, we'll give you this other function usage ID. We added in IBMI 7.6 a new function usage for IO sysconfig. So if all you need to do is view netstat, we'll give you that function usage.
Okay.
But we're not going to give you all object or IO sysconfig or all those other special authorities where you've granted too much authority.
Yeah.
So some of the ideas I've had for the database have been, I would like to have exit points for all of the different verbs. So you said update, that's a verb. I want to have an exit point for updates, an exit point for alters, an exit point for insert. We don't have that in the database today.
Okay.
And so you could utilize something like that for tracking, instant notification. And these are things that somebody's been authorized to be able to do it, but you want to have some additional rule. Perhaps the rule could even be deny.
Right.
You see where that was headed.
Yep, yep.
So it's on my list. When we can get to it, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But the answer to Holly's question and your question is absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I had a customer the other day that they were on, they had like a lot of authority, but they were trying to create device descriptions. And that was all they were trying to do. Or no, they were trying to just change existing ones and they couldn't do it. And so it was just like, if this could be kind of more targeted to this particular user so they could change devices, then that would be at least a little easier and you wouldn't have to give so much to somebody when you only need to
it's
do a couple
simple things.
Extremely
dangerous to have so many instances of all object authority. Or like recently I've been talking about saves the special authority. Lets the user read any data, and it's kind of surprising that it would, but it does.
Yeah.
So we're telling the story better, I think, externally, and that's one of my goals as well. I have a session I do on injecting better security into your database.
Okay.
And I show them how they can use SQL to see where they're exposed to attacks. We call it the bad actors and attack vectors.
Right.
So you run this query and you see which objects are exposed to that attack vector.
Yeah.
And these are all now packaged in ACS, and we need clients to know they exist and to run them and then take action.
Okay. Now, how does that correlate to, I know in your profile, you listed yourself as being an ethical hacker. What does that mean to you?
What it means to me is that I'm spending time looking at what we've been delivering to clients and trying to break it, trying to find a gap.
Yeah.
So that's where the ethical part comes in, is the hacking part, okay, find an exposure. Ethical part, put a plan in place to remediate it.
Before somebody else, a bad actor, does.
Yeah, it's a race in yeah. some cases.
Right.
To my knowledge, I've only had one instance where I was doing ethical hacking. I was sitting at my desk, and I've been using Linux since, you know, 1994, you know, and just whatever, for a long time. So I'm sitting at my desk. It's probably like 2000 or something like that. And there was this command I was going to run called nmap. And you can run this Linux nmap command, and it runs and it goes against all of the ports and IP addresses that are like, you know, ports that are on an IP address. And I ran it against an IBMI to see, well, what's open. And 10 minutes later, somebody from security walks by my desk and said, we need to talk to you. And they're like, why? What's going on? Well, you just crashed this one system. I'm like, really? I'm like, what do you mean? Well, like, what were you doing? And I'm like, well, for example, like, okay, there's a system here. And then you just run nmap space and then this system name and hit enter. And he's like, wait, stop. He's like, you're going to crash that one too. But based on that, then they fix that. But yeah, that was kind of funny at the time. Sorry.
Yeah, they handle those port sniffers much better these days than they used to.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, let's look back at our question list, Alex.
Now, I have one, actually. You get a new version of ACS, and you get all mm-hmm. these new SQL services, right?
Yep.
Visual Studio Code has a lot of GitHub integration.
Mm-hmm.
Do you typically do SQL statement development using GitHub? I mean, is there a repo that somebody would want to clone and pull down a long list of SQL services or SQL statements even?
You know, I've never got that question. That's a good question.
Well, to my knowledge, Scott keeps things in GitHub, but it never occurred to me that you might be using GitHub as you're doing the development.
I'm not. Okay. I probably should. That sounds good. I use the gists in GitHub as a way of sharing. Mm. Those are intentionally education focused. They start with building blocks, really basic thing. And then the very bottom of the script is actually the good part, the fully formed and working SQL solution to whatever the prompt was.
I base my SQL on what Scott does. So yeah. I wrote a document. I wrote a document because I had a customer that said, hey, I want to delete these save files in this particular library. And there's no command to do that because you can run delete file, but that's not save file specific.
Right.
So I looked at your gist on GitHub and I saw that you said, okay, here's how to do this, then stop. Here's how to do this. And so in mine, I start off with, here's how to list the save files. Here's how to list them with, you know, like a asterisk to do this. And then at the end, it has the whole thing. It lists them and then it shows how to actually delete them running a CL command. But that's such an easy way to learn by looking at things that are written that way.
It worked for me, and I've heard that back from a lot of people. So it's good that the approach seems to help. I thought it would be better than just posting final solutions, because if you do that, then you probably have missed an opportunity. You know, the how did I get there? And, oh, I could never get there on my own. I'll just do this thing and not know how it works. Oh, no. I want to just learn a little bit more. And before you know it, you're proficient at a lot of things.
We learn the alphabet before we learn how to spell.
Right.
So,
yeah,
it's helpful.
No GitHub integration, no master source. I'm writing SQL every day, uh-huh. and sometimes it just disappears. It's okay. The next version will be better probably anyways.
Okay,
right?
Yeah.
Your father worked on the system. You said your father-in-law
mm-hmm.
worked at IBM. You said that you picked computer science because you weren't quite sure what it what it was.
Yeah, got a Bachelor of Science degree and looked for jobs, and Rochester had a hiring freeze. So they would not interview me, and my mother and mother-in-law were not too happy. But it was a wonderful thing for my wife and I, because in Kingston, New York,
okay,
they really wanted me. So we found ourselves as newlyweds moving to upstate New York and joining IBM in a capacity.
Oh, at IBM.
Yeah, I worked on mainframe operating system development.
Okay. Would that have been Poughkeepsie?
Well, Kingston is just a little north of Poughkeepsie.
Oh, okay, okay.
But yeah, so that we had Kingston to the north, Poughkeepsie to the south. Kingston is now no longer an IBM facility.
All right.
Back then it was. And, excuse me, my team worked on bringing the Unix operating system to the mainframe. Open Edition MVS is what it was called. And so I knew the Unix operating system well.
Yeah.
And I got to Rochester because they had a project for bringing the Unix operating system to the AS400.
Like Pace or?
Pace.
Okay.
Q-Shell, IFS.
Oh, I didn't know you were involved with that.
No, I was the development team leader.
Oh, all right. That's awesome. This is why we do these podcasts.
I know, and then we get to.
I had no idea.
These are the people in your neighborhood, exactly.
Yeah, so I did New York for 5 years, mainframe, and then we transferred to Rochester, and I was on that, you know, that new team building all this Unix stuff, and my team kind of ran out of Unix things to add, and I told my manager I'm getting bored, and he said, "Would you go to database?" And I said, "Sure," and so I've been there ever since.
Yeah. Cool.
And that was in what year?
That was in 98.
Okay, so that's when I started too.
Yeah.
So over that time, I've been promoted to band 7, and you're an STSM. So I'm obviously need to work a little harder.
Get cracking, Kurt.
But 98 was a good year.
Get cracking. That's my brand.
Oh, hey.
What
Release
is that?
The Kraken.
So this is my own shirt line.
Really?
Yeah. So one of my passions is testing, because I think if you're an avid tester, you will learn more about whatever the topic is than anybody else.
Sure.
Because you know how it works.
Right.
So we should say that Scott is now wearing a shirt that has a very cool logo of a Kraken on it. It looks like a octopus with two extra appendages.
Yeah.
And it says, "Release the Kraken."
So I would use my SQL skills and my curiosity for whatever the topic to write these tests that would run a long time, but they would have repeatable randomicity to them.
Repeatable randomicity.
Yeah. So they're hitting the software differently, but they can repeat it differently. So I was able to hit software defects that were really tough.
Yeah, so you're hitting corner cases.
I'm hitting corner cases, but I've structured it in a way where I can repeat it and gather data, or repeat it and test a fix. So after I had done this for long enough, where people were asking, like, "What is this thing?" I said, I gave it the name. It's the Kraken.
Yeah.
The Kraken will come out and test this topic. So it's a testing methodology that I have brought over to India. And I have a whole set of teammates there who have Kraken shirts, because their onboarding experience to IBM was learning the way of the Kraken.
Okay.
And I remember when DB2 Mira was coming out, there was a video that we made about that. And your part of the video, you indicated that you were testing, and there was the repeatability aspect of testing and testing the servers as they went up and down. And
that was the same thing, but at an earlier date.
I created BART, a blocking and resync testing approach for a database to assure the quality of DB2 Mirror.
Yeah,
that was cool. I didn't understand what that meant. Now I do. Of course, then I was just a video editor. I wasn't part of the project. So many things I don't understand. That's cool. So you have a line, you have a shirt. What else do you have in the line?
Nothing else.
Okay.
Just ideas.
No trucker caps? No iPhone cases?
No iPhone cases. No. Oh, no.
Okay.
Yeah. That would be a good idea.
Can we talk about AI?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, okay, so LUG is going to happen here in October, and all those folks sign a non-disclosure agreement. none of our podcast listeners have signed a non-disclosure agreement. So I don't know if that's going to be a problem or not, but let's go ahead and ask some questions and we'll figure out if we can,
I can walk the
publish
line.
That or not. You can walk the line. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, really what we don't on our podcast, in order so that we can kind of edit it ourselves and so that it doesn't have to be gone over by IBM Legal, we really just don't talk about like new super breakthrough stuff or things that are related to ethical things.
Yeah, we can't make any promises like this will secure your system, for example.
Right.
That sort of thing.
So we do know that AI is coming, and ignoring it would be silly.
Yeah. So let's not ignore it. SQL, it's got the word language in there.
Mm-hmm.
Large language model also has the word language in there. SQL is a language, and LLMs are really good at language. If you had to guess 3 years from now, will people still be writing SQL, or are they going to write a natural language query or just make a request in a natural language and have the LLM translate that to an SQL statement that they can run on their system?
3 years. Okay.
Yeah, let's go 3 years.
3 years. I would love to think that we still have the software technologists and software engineers that we have today and that they're still craftspeople. Right? They've learned the craft, they have the business logic, and they're utilizing AI technologies to accelerate their activities. Maybe they've used them to take over the mundane tasks that consume a lot of us, right? How much time in your week is really creative thought time? You know, probably not as much as you'd like.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So let's relegate those things to AI, and you probably still have to monitor or interact with it in some manner, but less.
Mm-hmm.
And you have more time for creative innovation, you know, new topics or replacing existing things with better things.
Well, the one thing I was thinking about this morning when I was thinking about what are some AI topics you can kind of hit on is that one area where we don't see AI used much yet in IBM or support that I know is in identifying when a new system comes out that has new capabilities, can we have AI look at customer systems and existing scenarios and say, hey, this new technology will match up very well, even if it's not an AI technology, but AI being able to parse through, say, a memo to users or new capabilities that are coming out, and then automatically be able to look at their systems and say, hey, these are places where you could actually benefit rather than waiting for the customers to decide, well, okay, maybe I'll try this. Maybe you could give them, say, 5 or 10 things that you could try this right now and, you know, speed up your business or whatever.
I'm seeing different classifications that will probably emerge. You hit on one, like the developer persona. They're going to be AI. There are already AI helpers, mm-hmm. right? Oh, help me write this code or help me understand this code or mm-hmm. give me a test case. We never had a test case for this code or any other task that a programmer has to do. We're seeing that already. There's going to be more because, like you said, there's so much synergy there.
Yeah.
Right? It's language-based. Now, going into things like systems management or an untapped resource,
mm-hmm.
right? That starts to feel like more the agentic side of AI, mm-hmm. where there has to be tools that understand things
yeah.
that maybe other AI tools interact with, or maybe they don't.
Yeah, and you know, I was looking at a Windows 11 developer blog or something like that, and they were talking about Model Context Protocol Server for Windows 11, which would allow an agentic AI mm-hmm. entity to do stuff with your Windows system, like find a file or whatever. And I kind of wonder, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, but do you think that maybe something like that, will IBM I get a Model Context Protocol Server so that an AI entity could try to answer a user's query about the system? So, for example, if you type in a natural language, I'm worried about security exposures on my system in the middle of the night or something like that. Could that agentic AI system query the model context protocol server for IBM I and give you an SQL statement or even give you an answer to that natural language query?
I've already seen that happen.
Oh, really?
The whole question to me is, okay, how fast is this going to mature? And where are these MCP servers and clients running?
Okay.
And they don't have to be running on the IBM I to provide value to the IBM I.
Right.
Right, because you can connect things. So time will tell how fast this topic moves, but it sure feels like it's going to go fast.
Yeah.
Because the realm of what's possible is tremendous.
Yep.
You think of the artifacts of your business is on your IBM I. So, okay, that has innate value, huge value. But also, the artifacts of how you ran your business are on the IBM I. And guess what you can use to get at that?
Yeah.
SQL. SQL.
Yeah, right. So the many years of investment and this unique project of bringing SQL to the operating system, I think will have great value to clients.
Yeah.
Probably already does for this topic for some who are choosing to be maybe ahead of the curve in what they're trying.
Yeah, right. Speaking of being ahead of the curve, Alex, this is officially your last podcast with
yep.
UB and IBM I because you really decided you wanted to focus on that curve and start pursuing more projects, and we only have so much time in the day.
Yeah, I'm super excited about AI and all the stuff it could do, and I've been using it as a learning resource. You mm-hmm. know, I don't have a lot of experience programming, but apparently I didn't need to because I can go into Copilot and say, you know, give me a Python script that'll do this simple thing. And honestly, it helped me write an MCP server for IBM I.
Wow.
See? So look at this.
You know, I can give it the name of a schema, yeah. and it'll grab a bunch of table metadata for all the tables in that schema, and it'll send that metadata plus my question to the LLM, and the LLM will attempt to give me an SQL statement to return an answer regarding the question that that I asked it. So it's been a lot of fun, and I honestly, I want to spend more time doing that. And, you know, these podcasts are kind of time-consuming. there's actually a fair amount of labor behind them, so I can't spend too much time on it. I'm all in on AI.
I got here just in time.
I guess so.
Yeah, for sure. Yes, you did.
Well, good for you.
Well, congrats. I'm glad you're seeing such positive results from your work on that stuff.
Yeah, I used to
you and I know that we never took a programming class.
Well, I had Fortran. I had Fortran 77 back in school, and I did not like it.
Shocker.
Yeah.
That's funny.
But I'm really excited to see what the future holds for how AI can help the platform. I think it's going to be huge.
So, little fun aside, I've been using AI in my life more than I thought I would, because mm-hmm. I really enjoyed doing things on my own. But then I thought, all right, let's spend some time including it. So last night, my wife asked me to build a playlist for some event that she's going to do, because she knows I love music and I'm so eclectic, I probably would come up with a decent list.
Alex, you also have a very eclectic music taste, and I think you have a very good sense of what is good music.
Thank you. Yeah, I do love music. I listen to it all whenever I can. I'm a cyclist, so I bike into work, and I got my earbuds in, and I love it.
Do you like the Squirrel Nut Zippers?
I don't know them, but I will soon, I guess.
It's you could call it ragtime jazz.
Okay. So I went to my AI engine I was using at home, and I gave it this big prompt about the event and all these things and the boundaries, and it gave me a playlist, and it told me why it was the right playlist, and this would be the energy level of this thing and that thing.
Oh, wow.
I thought it was super cool.
Yeah.
And then I went song by song and tried to evaluate it, and I'm like, oh, I can replace that one with this other one.
Yeah.
Before I knew it, it was my list and not the list I started with.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
It's a tool. You know, I used to be afraid of AI, to be honest. I was not on board. I was afraid it was going to take all of our jobs. I was afraid that it was going to be an engine of inequality because, you know, you've got all these huge corporations that are primarily, you know, they're the ones creating these foundation models, and they've got a tremendous amount of power, this huge ability to give users information, right? And that seemed unfair, undemocratic to me, right? But then I discovered a couple of things. First of all, IBM's approach to AI is different, right? We are not investing huge amounts of money in data centers to run these massive foundation models. We are focusing on smaller, you know, 2 billion parameter models, 8 billion parameter models. You can run these things on consumer hardware.
Right.
And then I found Ollama, which is, you know, it's one of several different technologies that will let you run large language models on your own personal hardware.
That's what I was using.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah.
Very exciting.
What kind of music do you like, Scott?
I like a lot of different types of music.
Okay.
So I've been having fun playing record albums, if you've heard of those.
Yes,
vinyl.
Of course. Yep.
Yeah. So I have it organized by different types of music. So there's many different types.
Yeah.
So not one. I'm not going to lock myself down. No. What was it? The squirrel picnic?
Squirrel nut zippers.
Squirrel nut
squirrel
zippers.
Squirrel picnic even yeah. better.
Squirrel nut zippers. Okay.
It's yeah. excellent. But,
I'll tune that up. Cam Cole. I'll give that one back to you.
Cam Cole.
Yeah.
Okay. Doesn't ring a bell.
The most profound single person band ever.
Okay.
Okay.
One person band.
All right.
And when you listen to it, you'll do the same thing I did. No. No, that's not one person.
Well, they're putting tracks down and then recording over the, you know, multi-track recording.
Nope. Give it a look.
Cam Cole. All right. We're
doing some music trading on your podcast today.
I'll throw in my AI thing. So recently my wife and I started watching The Rockford Files, which is, of course, James Garner, you know. And she was a little bit critical of the show because it uses the same tropes every time, right? He tails somebody, then they'll follow him. He uses a fake identity. The police always think he did it. You know, there's these things that constantly keep happening. And she was a little tired of watching it. So I went to an AI and I said, hey, make me some bingo cards that we can use to play along where it will identify the tropes and the common themes. And so last time we played for the first time and I realized I do need to modify a little bit because it was really too trope specific. We should do things like more things like, you know, more common.
Trailer at the beach. Did we see the beach?
Yes. Do we see the beach? You know, does he mention the street he lives on? Is Rocky in it? You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, the
well, that's clever.
It's fun to let it. I don't like the idea that AI is often used to just completely be someone's, you know, their source of creativity. But it certainly helps us to make more things with our own creativity
and well said.
Giving us good ideas about
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, that's my feeling now. It's a tool that allows me to be more creative, I think, because it's hard. It's hard work to do all the mundane tasks that are required to actually create something. But it's, I don't know, personally for me, I have ideas, you know?
Yeah,
and right.
And it's a tool that allows me to express those ideas.
Well, and you only have so much time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
I bike to work as well. So we have more in common.
Oh, all right.
As we go along.
Yeah,
here.
That's crazy.
Oh, that's awesome.
Music, biking.
How long is your commute?
My commute is like 23 minutes coming in and a little bit shorter going home.
Okay. Mine is a little less than that. I'm about 16, 17 minutes coming in, 15 on the way back. Do you bike through the winter or not?
Not as of yet, no.
Okay.
No. Fair weather biker, I guess you could say it.
Yeah.
Totally but I fine. Do come up 37th, so that's a little bravery too, though. So.
I'm surprised I haven't bumped into you. I guess we're going in and out of work at the different times.
Could be. Could be.
Maybe I'll find your tracks in the snow this winter.
Thank you so much for joining us today on our podcast. This has been really fun. I was excited that when I asked you about it, because I wanted to ask you for a long time, and I was really happy that when I did ask him, his response was not, well, yeah, I'll see if I can fit you in, but yeah, I was waiting for you to ask me. That made me feel really good.
Oh, that's great.
I did say that, didn't I? No, I was delighted, and it's an honor to be here. So keep up the good work. Keep the episode coming. Your viewers are loving it.
Thanks again for joining us today on You,
Me,
and IBMI.